Okay, this time we have Antonio Medrano, Tracy Rosenberg, and Richard Phelps.
Uh-oh, wait a minute. We're on the air?
No.
I didn't get my makeup set.
We're on the iPod. Don't get so excited.
I have a question.
Go ahead, ma'am.
When I was visit the board and listen to the board try to do business, it seemed as though each board member had so much to say about everything that nothing very much is accomplished. How would you solve the issue of helping people restrain themselves from expressing every idea in their head before you can make a decision?
Antonio Medrano, it sounds like a Richmond City Council meeting that goes on till 2 in the morning. I think you all have to agree on a procedure to follow, whether, you know, Rich gets 3 minutes, I get 3 minutes. You know, I shouldn't get 20 minutes to voice my opinion on something. Stick to the minutes. You know, give a certain time of minutes to each of the speakers, because otherwise you'll never get done. And people won't stay up until midnight to listen to you. So it's got to be run more, you know, you have to agree to certain rules. The Richmond City Council, and I hear the Oakland City Council the same way, just the people go on for hours and hours and hours and hours, and people forget what the original question was. But they have to agree to a certain established procedure. Otherwise, people will stop coming to the meetings.
Tracy Rosenberg. Well, I'll put myself on the record as an official hater of Robert's Rules of Order. And I'm not necessarily saying there's an alternative, although I've read about Roberta's Rules of Order and I'm interested. But I think it makes people feel antagonistic. I think it makes people feel over-controlled. And I think a lot, you know, people talk and talk and talk and talk because they don't feel like they're being heard, because they don't feel like they're being effective, because they feel like whatever it is that they're saying has to be expressed or something will go askew. And if everybody on the board feels that all of the time, then something about the facilitation process, something about the rules of engagement needs to change. So it comes down to who's chairing, how they're chairing, and what are the rules of engagement that we're using, and why the heck aren't they working? It's a big board. I mean, you got 25 people. It's never going to be short. I mean, it's not ever going to be short. But I think it can be a little shorter and a little tighter than it is. And part of what I'm running on is that I facilitated for 2 years a KPFA working group with, you know, some of these same people. Some of them are on the board now. That was, you know, part staff and part listeners and part board members. And, you know, we had a two-hour meeting once a week, and then we shut up and we made decisions and we did things. And I'm trying to bring some of that experience to the board. It's one of the things that I think that I'm bringing, is some facilitation that I don't think was quite as horrible as some of what I've seen.
Can I have a follow-up question? What were you facilitating?
KPFA's program council, the decision-making body, yeah, which is a mixture of the paid staff, department heads, unpaid staff representatives, board members, and listeners. About 15 people, not 25, and 15 is a heck of a lot easier.
And you felt that was successful.
But a crew, yeah.
Hi, Richard Phelps. I've done something to try to help that. I put forward a motion that was passed that required all reports that were going to be given to the board members be given to us a week ahead of time, so that we didn't have to read them and talk about them there. We could read them, discuss them with each other, and come to the board already prepared, so that a lot of that discussion doesn't have to happen. If we know what we're going to be doing ahead of time, then, you know, I can call up somebody else and say, hey, what do you think about this? Henry, what do you think about this? What are we going to do with it? You know, and then you come to the board more developed, more understanding where the different positions are, and you don't have to spend as much time talking. That's one of the important things that has done, and I haven't seen you there for a while. Things have gotten a little better in that respect because of that. What Tracy said is right. It's a big board. I chaired that board for 14 months, and I told people at the other table, after every meeting that I chaired, I had a splitting headache, because my whole goal is to provide a level playing field as a chair. I work as a professional mediator. I've chaired meetings and done things like that for years. And the whole idea is to try to allow everybody's ideas to get out so it's fair. And that comes across, you know, sometimes it takes some time to do that. Sometimes people are long-winded. Some people get off subject, and then it's my job to say, excuse me, but you're off subject. Could you do that? Some people interrupt, and you have to tell them you're out of order. It's a tough job. But the whole point is, I agree with you. I mean, people, I think more preparation ahead of time is the real key to board meetings being much more efficient. The other thing, everybody needs to remember something about those board meetings. They're not community meetings. They are business meetings, what people are allowed to come and watch. Unfortunately, our job is to try to conduct business of governance of the station. It's a dirty job, but somebody has to do it. It's hard. It takes time. And there are various different opinions that need to be expressed. So, you know, I think the first thing that needs to be guaranteed always is a level playing field. I mean, at the last board meeting in San Jose, this very quiet, peaceful young man over here got irate because the chair let one person speak about 10 times in a row with everybody else's hands up. She kept going back to her buddy. And finally, Henry said, point of privilege, you can't do that. And she stopped. But, I mean, fairness is primary. And then efficiency, I think, is next. And that's what we have to work for. And it takes a cooperative attitude. And everybody has to chip in.
So I have a question. So one of the LSB's duties is to make sure that station policies and procedures are operating to make sure that programming decisions are made in a fair, collaborative, and respectful manner. So my question is, what is your vision of a policy that would fulfill?
You mean decisions
fulfill?
Taken by the board?
No, programming decisions. Mm-hmm. The policy must make sure that programming decisions are made in a fair, collaborative, and respectful mm-hmm. manner. So my question is, what is your vision of such a policy? And last time I asked, no one mentioned the program director, but I think the program director is going to want to play a part in how programming decisions are made. So I think that your answer would be better if it included a role for the program director.
You want me to go first? Because you're right here.
Could I just ask you, what do you mean by a program decision? What is a program decision?
Programming decision is putting on a new program, taking off a program, having a special...
assigning programs.
Right.
Yes. Making changes to the program.
I can speak to this from a couple of different perspectives. Number one, in my youth, I worked in radio, and at one station, I was a program director. I had the authority to make all those decisions, but because of who I am, what my politics were at that time, I did it collaboratively with the people on the staff. But I had the final decision because my boss was going to fire me if I didn't do it right, because that was a commercial station. But I tried to do it as collaborative. Here we have a history of a program council for several years, and I think there needs to be an integration between the program council and the program director, because there are so many different groups represented here, so many different cultures, so many different, you know, communities. There's no way one person can know all that. And I think if you have a group of people, the program council as it stands, according to the rules that we passed in May of 2004, is supposed to have staff, listeners, LSB members. And my feeling would be it'd be good if there were a few more listeners on there to balance out various different communities on the program council, in a collaborative process, and the program director would be there to help direct it and show, you know, certain things can and can't be done, and decisions get made and programs change. I mean, there are programs there that I think need to be either updated or modified or changed, and new things could be brought in. But I think we need to have the program council doing that with the program director directly involved as the leader of the program council. And then, you know, if they, as Brian said, don't go along with the general sense of what is correct with the mission, then of course the LSB may have to step in. But that if you want to go look at it, go into the archives of the LSB and go to May 8th, 2004. A motion was passed there that sets out a protocol that. I got you, but I want to finish the sentence. I see everything you're doing. But I want you to understand this, because people don't know the history of KPFA. The protocol is laid out there very directly about the interchange between the program council, the manager, and the LSB. And it's right there. If you go online, you can find it. If you want, tell me your email address. I'll send you a copy of it.
My turn. Okay. Tracy Rosenberg. Well, I mean, you're paying a program director for 40 hours a week to come up with some ideas about programming. No reason to waste that. That's what they should be doing. My feeling about it is if you've got a requirement that things be fair, collaborative, and respectful, then like any high-level manager, they've got to go in to whoever it is that they work with, and they've got to convince them that their ideas have merit. That's what the program council's for. You bring in people from different places who don't work for this person, community reps, board members, the department heads that do work for them, but who maybe a little bit more, you know, hands-on on the specifics in their subject area, and community reps. And you say, this is what I'm thinking, this is why I'm thinking it, what do you guys think? And if you can't convince a representative selective body that the idea is good, well, then maybe the idea is not so good, and maybe you go back to the drawing board and try to come up with something else. If you can, then you've got a decision. You've got a programming decision. You've probably got a pretty good one, because all these people from these different places, the majority of them have been able to sign on. That's what I think fair, collaborative, respectful programming is.
Richard mentioned that when he was a program director back, I don't know what station he was at, that he made all the decisions. My concern is if the program director is hired to make these decisions of what program goes on at 10 or whatever it happens to be, we should respect his decision. If his decision is proved to be so bad and so non-cooperative with the staff, then the guy should be changed. But isn't that the job of the program director to decide what programs go on? In collaboration? Yeah, in collaboration with the staff, right? You got to let me finish. And then she said community reps. I always hear community reps. How are those community reps selected? Is it whoever comes to the meeting? Is it announced that we're gonna elect community reps? Is it, how balanced is the selection of the community reps? If you just keep on selecting people who agree with you, then it's not true democracy. So anyway,
you select them as a member of the board.
It wasn't done that way at all. I was involved in the process. It was very
If we have back and forth conversations, that's all I'm asking. What are the rules? That's all I'm asking.
Okay. Well, you posed a rhetorical question. I want to give you the information.
Okay. As long as I can respond to you later on,
fine.
It's fine. Okay. Because what are the rules?
That's what I'm saying. And there's an answer I'll give it to you.
I'm a retired worker, and I've been a shop steward. I spent years in jail in my country of birth for defending the rights of workers. And right here on KPFA, there's nothing about workers. What they are talking is about the Mexican scabs who are taking the jobs of the U.S. workers and actually making the deterioration of the wages in this country. And there's no program for the working class, which is the majority. And so what I'm asking is this. Are you willing to change those policies that represent only a minority of the population for the majority of the population? Or are you going to continue with the same thing that we can hear, for example, on Flashpoint on Fridays?
Well, I guess I would basically disagree with your initial analysis. You know, my understanding of why there are immigrant workers here is because U.S. imperialism has ruined those economies of those other countries, and people come here to find work to live. And people that are doing the low-wage jobs here, you know, deserve to be treated fairly and respectfully as anybody else. And so I think it's a different dynamic that I see than you see. So I'm not sure that I'm going to want to change things at the station to fit in with your agenda. I think that the immigrant workers need to be treated fairly. They need to be organized. They need to have their programs on the air. I have good relationships with the Friday night programs that do that, both of them. And I think they should keep doing what they're doing. I think we probably need to have more Spanish language programs on the radio because of the population here that's speaking Spanish as a number one language. And those people need to be organized to stand up against, you know, corporate America.
My turn? Okay. Tracy Rosenberg. I do think that programs that assess the impact of immigrant labor on the American working class are reasonable. I think programs that look at tensions and that look at negative impacts and that look at causes of misunderstanding between groups and communities are part of our mission. And that's what you're talking about. You're talking about a misunderstanding. You're talking about two groups that are getting screwed, that are seeing each other as the source of the problem when really your problem's way up there and you're both getting messed up. That's my analysis of it. And maybe you disagree, and that's fine, but that's the way that I would focus programming in that area if I were doing it. You know, the role of a board member is to say, is the programming policy fair, respectful, and collaborative? It's not to say, do a program on this, do a program on that. But I do think feedback and input such as yours needs to come into the station, and it needs to be looked at seriously. Because to me, it's, here's an example of a misunderstanding between, here's a source of non-communication. Here's a tension that's going on. Let's examine it and look at it and analyze it. That's what we're here to do.
I also, Antonio Medrano, I also disagree with your description of the immigrant workers as scabs. I think what we should look at are giant corporations who take jobs out of this country, send them overseas, and then throw people out of work in this country. I grew up in the Central Valley. Working in the fields, picking cotton. And when I drive now into the valley to see my mom, I see a lot of workers in the fields. And many of them are not paid a just wage. Workers should be paid a just wage, allowed breaks, allowed water breaks, etc. The whole thing about Cesar Chavez and the farm worker movement, you know, when I worked in the fields, there was no restrooms in the fields for us. That finally got worked through because of the farm worker movement. I wouldn't classify the workers as scabs. The scabs are the giant corporations who take away jobs from us and ship them overseas. You know, the fact that we're having to buy articles or clothing or toys from China, and they're coming across tainted, unfortunately, those things should be made here for U.S. workers in this country. And stop blaming the workers that come here just to provide a better life for their kids, better education for their kids. We should blame the giant corporations, whether it's Walmart or Sears or Penny's. Look and see where their articles of clothing are made. That concern should be aimed at the corporations. Bring work back to the United States and not overseas.
Henry? Well, I just have a suggestion that we use the time for a little back and forth about the question about programming decision-making at the station.
Going back and forth.
Well, it sounds like that's, it's between.
Let me answer his question a while ago about.
I was the chair of the programming committee on the LSB with the first time that we picked LSB members and community members picked. And we went through a very deliberative process. We advertised on the station. For the listeners that wanted to come in, we interviewed people, we checked out their histories and stuff, and then we did a voting. To select the top four or five, and then we brought those to the whole LSB, and they spoke, and then they were elected. And so I think it was a good process. On the LSB, you know, we picked members amongst ourselves to have three LSB members on the board, on the program council, and then we picked three community members. And we just picked some new community members. I think we got very good people. We had good diversity. Process can always be improved, but it wasn't this is my buddy, get him on there. It was deliberative questions were asked. Henry was involved in that early selection process, and you know, it had some flaws in an organizational way. Part of that was because upper management was getting in the way. And
how long did this serve?
A year or 18 months, it depends. We're reevaluating that.
Thank you, guys.